The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
You know, I sent out a tweet at about 1:30 this morning, and I said I was not planning on doing show prep till 1:30. But Ursula, I am telling you, as crazy as these times are, and as much as I chronicle the craziness on a daily basis, I just felt like we kind of went next level in the last 24 hours in all the craziness.
I know. There are a couple of stories that really rise to the top.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, locally, nationally, these celebrities, Felicity Huffman and Deborah Messing, they're...
Deborah Messing? She also?
No, not Deborah Messing.
Lori Loughlin.
Yeah, Deborah Messing's in the news for some other craziness today. Lori Loughlin from Full House.
Yeah.
She was a cutie.
But that doesn't matter.
No, it does.
Whatever.
No, no. It's the cute ones always fall the hardest, Ursula. So we find out that they've been using other people's children to take their kids' SAT and ACT scores, that in some cases they're bribing coaches.
And this is all to get into some top colleges.
The most elite, the A-list schools. And you know, you got all these Hollywood people who are always screaming at the top of their lungs about the immorality of politics and politicians they hate because they're liars. And we find out that they're willing to screw over other people's children so that their kids can get a spot that's not deserved. And on it goes. It has been just a wild ride in just assembling the stuff we have to talk about today. And so, without any further ado, let's get right to our top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
And by the way, I do have some further ado. Remember that story yesterday, the Lake Stevens dad?
The homeowner.
He found out that a guy had been squatting in his garage. The guy had assembled a arsenal of machetes and knives and ball peen hammers so that if anybody ever came in the garage, he would have within arm's length a deadly weapon to kill. And so his mom rents a duplex that is, she can see the garage. Mm-hmm. And she calls her son and goes, that really strange man that you hired is still out there. And the son said, I didn't hire any man to do any work. So the dad comes to his place with his 21-year-old son and his son's buddy, and they go and confront this heavily armed man in the garage.
Yeah, because as we explained yesterday, he doesn't use his garage except for...
It's a workshop.
It's a workshop.
Yeah,
yeah,
he repairs electric wheelchairs.
Yeah, so he didn't know this was happening until his mom alerted him.
Thank goodness this man is a legal gun owner, because we could have had a triple homicide with him and his son and his son's buddy. So you're going to hear that story coming up at 12:30 this afternoon. Dave Wyman's going to join us. But there's one story I want to spotlight today. I didn't have a chance to get to it. The Seattle Times did a great story, wonderful reporting. I always give attribution, even though they never give attribution to me. But the Times had a great story about the viaduct and how much property values have skyrocketed. And one theme of this show the last few days that I've been on the air is how the average person, the working class, the middle class around here, is getting screwed over. Because our one-party government, the Democrats have been working with some of the wealthiest developers and real estate owners to make sure that they can get next-level wealth built on your money, even though they have thousands, tens of thousands more wealth than you or me. And they use this corrupt local government that we have, and it is a corrupt cesspool right now in Seattle and King County. And when you see the insider dealings with Dow Constantine and Peter Rogoff at Sound Transit, not to watch out for the taxpayers, not to improve transportation in the region, but to screw you over. Sound Transit has been constructed to make a lot of really rich people even wealthier through your and my hard work. And it's not just Sound Transit. The Seattle Tunnel Project is a perfect example of that. And this is another I told you so. Because when they were evaluating the replacements for the viaduct, they had this study. The viaduct has to come down because an earthquake will bring it down. It's an urgent problem. But then the urgency disappeared. They were willing to risk the lives of tens of thousands of people because their top priority became, how do we extract maximum money out of working class people here in the Puget Sound area? They could have shored up the existing viaduct and brought it up to seismic ratings where they could be reasonably confident that it would not come down if the big one hits. They could have done a Elliott Bay Bridge, which was the plan that I supported, where instead of going underground, you'd come out of the Battery Street Tunnel, and then you would have a beautiful landmark arcing bridge over Elliott Bay that would then reconnect with Highway 99 south of the football and baseball stadiums. That would have been a fraction of the cost. They could have done a cut-and-cover tunnel. That would have been a fraction of the cost. But they went with the most expensive and the riskiest of all the options, the deep bore tunnel. Why? Well, with the deep bore tunnel, it was the most expensive, which means the contractors and the labor unions would get the maximum amount of tax dollars for themselves. And so that's number one reason. And then this wonderful bit of reportage by the Seattle Times and their real estate writer, Mike Rosenberg. Martin Selig, one of the wealthiest people in our state. He built the Columbia Center, the landmark building in downtown Seattle. Martin Selig, well connected to the politicians behind the tunnel project, he bought a century-old drab office building for $44 million. It was connected to the viaduct. It had to be torn down. And so he's building an 18-story apartment and office building in its place. Another investor spent $50 million to buy and renovate another aging building. The owner then flipped that property for a $186 million profit. Now, I want you to think about this. While you are paying skyrocketing taxes, and again, the tunnel is not a Sound Transit project, but you are going to be on the hook, you and me, for hundreds of millions, possibly billions. I'll put my money on billions. They haven't announced the total overruns for the tunnel, but I think it's going to be over a billion. You and I are on the hook for this. And what's our benefit? Well, instead of a beautiful view of the water, a couple minutes of respite as you're driving to and from work, but you could look out over Elliott Bay and perhaps see a sunset on your way home from work, or see just the beautiful sparkling water on a summer morning on your way into work. Now, you got to drive through a dank tunnel now. So you lose on the view. You lose on the taxes. And who gains? Well, the politicians, because when you have developers and labor unions beholden to you, then you have power. And that's all these politicians are working for, is power. They're not trying to do right by the people. They are certainly not trying to improve this region. They just want power, because power is an aphrodisiac. And so the politicians get what they want, and the developers. And yes, I believe that there are, and I don't have the documents, but do I believe that these politicians are richly rewarded, not just with power, but in other ways? And we've seen that with the lying Seattle City Councilman Rob Johnson, who somehow got a sweet gig with the new Seattle NHL team, so he can continue to work feverishly to screw over taxpayers. So you lose your view, you lose hundreds of dollars a year in extra taxes, the politicians get more power, and I just told you about the buildings they flipped for $186 million profit. Another block north of that, Gonzaga University, they were given a parking lot by a philanthropist about 4 years ago. And Gonzaga said, you know what, we're just going to develop that ourselves. We're going to put a 17-story apartment complex on the site. They're going to turn that into hundreds of millions of dollars in wealth for an already very wealthy private university. 24 major projects within a quarter mile of the viaduct have been put underway. And they are making a fortune. And again, it's $200 a time from you, $300 from me, $400 from your brother. And it's all going to the developers. Assessed value of property within a quarter mile of the viaduct has gone up 59% since 2011. The Seelig project, Martin Seelig, it's on land owned by the Jacoby family, which owns Windermere Real Estate. They've had property down there for more than 50 years. But if they could get the taxpayers to pick up the bill for tearing down the viaduct, well, they could get even wealthier. Short-term property flippers down by the viaduct have made a median of $11 million on their flips. At 2nd and Stewart, two blocks from the viaduct, a real estate company bought a plot of empty land for $9.7 million in 2012. Then they built an apartment complex. At a cost of $95 million, they have now sold it for $130 million. They made $25 million, boom, like that. You paid for it. You work your butt off so you can give your money to the wealthiest developers. And that money then gets into the hands of the corrupt single party that runs this region. And on it goes. Want any more? Or are you sick to your stomach thinking about all this? How about this Hudson Pacific Properties? They raised the value of their block from $25 million to $131 million. And the beat goes on. The beating goes on. But this is what I've been talking about for years, that we have a political structure that is designed, as long as Democrats have control of everything, they will tell these lies about how they care about the poor and the working class, and then they construct deals that make taxpayers pay for the most expensive projects so developers can increase their wealth by billions of dollars. It's just, it's nauseating. We are at a nauseating time in local politics. And the fact that so many people continue to put up with it is mind-blowing to me. That you continue to buy the lies of the party of the people, right? Okay, all of that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
I got a lot more. I am just barely chipping off a little cube of the iceberg. Up next, we will talk with a Lake Stevens dad who encountered a presumed drug vagrant with a deadly arsenal in this father's garage. Wait until you hear the encounter next. More craziness as we get rolling here on a Tuesday afternoon. We told you a story on yesterday's big show about yet another local family having to deal with yet another nightmare because of the drug vagrants that are all around our region. But I wanted to hear the story from the person's own mouth. Shane McDaniel, he lives up in Lake Stevens, and he had quite a Friday with his family. And Shane joins us here on Cairo Radio. Shane, it's good to talk with you. I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Thank you. Thank you, Dory.
Tell me what happened. Just walk me through this chronologically here. What time of day did all this madness begin?
Well, it's hard to say what time it actually began because this guy had had been at my property for quite some time. He had been there working all day constructing basically a duck blind about 30 feet away from my mother's bedroom window.
This was in your garage?
Yeah, he was not just in the garage, but in the yard.
Okay.
So my mom is seeing this guy that's 30 years old, that's creepy looking with a beard, and she just figures because he's working on my property all day, and not I mean so blazing that she thought that he belonged there.
Wow.
And so after him being there working all day, she gave me a call and said, you know, that weird guy is still here. And I said, what weird guy? She said, well, the guy that you hired that's been working out next to my apartment. And I said, I didn't hire a guy, Mom. And so me and one of my boys and his friend hopped in the truck and immediately drove up there. And we found a guy in my garage.
Well, so paint the picture for me a little bit, Shane. So is this a detached garage?
Yes, yes. It's a detached garage that's next to the duplex apartment that my mother lives in.
Okay, all right, got it. Okay, so you, your son, how old's your son?
He's 21.
Okay, you, your 20-year-old son, and his buddy, you go flying up there to see what's going on, and what do you encounter when you get there, Shane?
We see a strange vehicle backed up to the building, and you can see he built a big labyrinth out of fence board panels, basically trying to block view, and you can't tell if he was blocking the view of so he could sit right next to my mom's apartment and not be seen from behind, or was he trying to block my mom's view of the garage, or was he trying to do both? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But he was very close to her apartment, not just in the garage, but, like I said, built a duck blind 30 feet from her window.
Well, it also sounds like he was assembling quite an armory of weapons as well. Is that right?
You know, I think judging by the needles and the meth and stuff like that, there was a bunch of passports and IDs, cell phones, lots of stolen, like he'd stolen a lot of purses or something, you know. But Yeah, he had, I'm sure, been very paranoid, thinking that there was an altercation coming. You know, he knows he's where he shouldn't be, and he'd set knives up. I repair wheelchairs and mobility scooters for people that can't afford them.
Okay.
And he had set those chairs up to where if you came in, you could have gotten past it, but in a combat situation, once you engaged, it would be difficult to escape the building.
Okay.
And he had knives and machetes and these things situated around, and these weren't my knives. These were ones he brought, and they were situated around, sitting on each chair, claw hammer here, a machete there, an axe here. And I didn't really realize it till the next day, like, wow, this is actually a trap. He's got it set up to where if he got somebody came in, if they got so many feet inside that building, he would have control of them big time.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like you always wanted to have something deadly within arm's reach in case he had to go to war.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely, because it was not set up this way, and there's just no way you would have these weapons placed like that every 3 feet. You know, it was just too perfect.
And was there
the only thing missing was a hole in the floor with a net covering it and some leaves as far as the trap goes.
Jeez. So was there a vehicle in the garage that he could use for cover, or is it just a big workspace?
It's a big workspace, but there's walls and multiple rooms in that garage. So.
Okay, so you are a legal, and from the little bit we talked off the air, a well-trained gun owner, it sounds like.
Yeah, I've been shooting since about the time I could walk.
Okay. All right. And so when you walked into this, I mean, it sounds like a scene right out of a movie, the weapons that this guy had assembled. So you walk in and you are armed, I assume?
Yeah, I walk in and I'm armed, and we engage. We called the police right when we got there. So one kid's on the phone with 911, and then we engage just a couple feet inside the doorway, and he's reaching. He had a knife in one hand that he tossed off to the left. I didn't know what it was at first, but the only thing laying there was two knives, so it wasn't hard to deduct after the fact. But and it's pretty dark. It, you know, there's lights, but it's dark. It's night. It's kind of in the shadows and in the light again. So it's a confusing time. But
you don't know if he has a gun. You have no idea if he's got a gun.
He's reaching for something in his coat, and you know, my sixth sense told me he was reaching for a gun.
Right.
You know, and he was.
He did have a gun. Okay. So,
and it ended up being a pellet gun, but how am I supposed to know the difference?
Yeah, no, of course. Okay. So, what do you do?
So I've got my gun on him. I'm telling him, let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. And, he won't stop reaching for this gun. So I fired my pistol to the side into the dirt up against the building, you know, and people will say, that was dangerous. Well, it was a lot less dangerous than shooting him. I can assure you of that.
Well, yeah. And you would have been, I mean, as much as I know about the law, you at that point would have been fully within your rights to shoot him, right?
Yeah, and but that doesn't mean that I have to.
Right, no.
You know?
But I mean, it just illustrates, because I've heard the same thing you just referenced, Shane, that some people have criticized you for the warning shot. I would think those people would agree that if you don't have to kill the guy, you don't kill the guy. So is the criticism from the anti-gun crowd, or is the criticism from the "you should have taken out a bad guy and killed him when you had a chance" crowd?
There you go. It's not the anti-gun crowd, because I don't want to shoot somebody. it's the people that are saying, nope, you should have killed him, and basically trying to hold me to some RCW that says that if you're in fear for your life, you have to shoot center mass.
Right. Okay.
And I can, you know what, and if you are a jumpy, jittery person and you're scared and you're not good with a weapon and all of the above, then you should shoot center mass.
Sure. Yeah.
But if you are as calm and controlled as I believe I am and is good with a gun, well, if, you know, just to put it in perspective, if I was in one end of a garage and here's a lunatic in the other and he's running at me with a machete, now I can shoot him in the chest and be legal. But if I am good enough with my gun to fire a warning shot and get him to stop, or maybe I shoot him in the leg as he's running up, but under state law, I should be going to jail if I shoot him in the leg because they're saying you're not fearing for your life. And I say that's they haven't been in a shootout. You can be completely in fear of your life and still, you know, shoot somebody without shooting to kill.
Yeah, exactly.
It just depends on the marksman.
Okay.
But I'd like to think that if somebody's running at me from 40 feet away, I could shoot their earlobes off before they got here.
Okay, got it.
And
all
so
right,
why
so,
do I got to kill them?
So you fire that warning shot, and does that defuse the situation?
Oh, no, it didn't defuse it. It got him to quit pulling that gun out, and he started to go down, you know, started to cooperate, and then all of a sudden him and my son are in a big brawl, and then I grab him, and all three of us are in a big fight, and this is a tough boy to get a hold of. You know, he's 30 years old and a lot bigger than us, and, you know, when you look up some of his criminal exploits, he kicked a chief of police in the face and tried to disarm a cop. He got stunned by four cops and still wouldn't go down.
No.
And still fought. You
My
know, this
goodness.
Is a violent guy.
So how did the conflict come to an end?
He kept, basically, we kept fighting until we had him submitted. We couldn't get total control of him until the very end.
Yeah.
You know?
My goodness. Well, you're all alive. Just having to have gone through something like that. I know that, you know, good prepared gun owners, you don't ever want to have to use all that training, but it sure sounds like you did everything right, Shane.
Yeah, if I could go back in time and shoot him, I would not do that, Dory. I mean,
yeah.
I think that the things ended as good as they could. And if I broke the law to save his life, then I guess that's what happened, you know. But that means the law's broke. If the law means you got to shoot somebody to kill them, I disagree with that law. You know, they're saying, oh, well, in Texas you would have been fine, but here, not.
Are they telling you you might still be in some legal jeopardy?
Oh, just people on, you know, I haven't had law enforcement say that to me.
Okay.
You know. They did tell me that I was on thin ice, you know, that night. But I disagree with that.
Yeah.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think that, like I said, Dory, you could have a son that's 30 years old, that's been on dope and struggling and this and that, and maybe he goes out and makes some mistakes. I don't want to kill your son.
Right.
You know, this is somebody's son. This is somebody's brother. I am not judge, jury, and executioner. I don't want to be. And it could have ended up happening that way. If things would have gone just a little bit different, I would have had to shoot him. What if he would have gotten that gun out and he would have said, put it right to my kid's head and said, drop your gun.
Yeah.
And then he picks mine up and he does a triple homicide.
Yep.
You know, or what if it wouldn't have been? What if it would have been, you know, even a pellet gun can kill you. I mean, I never saw his weapon, but, you know, what if he just would have stabbed us to death? I mean, this guy was ready to do battle.
Well, I hope that put him away for a long, long time. We've got too many of these guys running around out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It could have gone a lot worse. But,
well, Shane,
you know,
I really appreciate
of what this guy's going to do in the future.
Yeah.
You know, that's not my spot to be judge, jury, and executioner.
I got it. Well, I appreciate you sharing your story with me and my listeners. I'm glad you and your boy are safe and well done.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Shane, thanks for coming on today.
No problem.
Shane McDaniel up in Lake Stevens. Love to hear your thoughts on this. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, we got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. Dave Wyman has been out of town the last couple of weeks, but he's going to join us at 1:30, our weekly visit with our buddy Dave returns. Back in Washington, D.C., the craziness just absolutely continues. The president is setting up for another budget showdown with Congress. As he says in his 2020 budget, he needs $8.6 billion for the border wall. And Congress seems to be in no mood to give the president that kind of money. But there's one thing in particular, and I like that. I want the wall built. There's another story today about a twice-deported illegal who came back into this country, snuck back in for a third time, and sexually assaulted a little girl. And we always hear from Democrats, if it can save just one life. Well, just think about that little girl who wouldn't have been sexually assaulted if we had a way to keep the illegals out. But the thing that I love about Trump's proposed budget, because I told you, he's going to lose me if he keeps running up $1 trillion a year in additional debt for our country. And that's what's shaping up, is our annual deficit is $1 billion a year for the foreseeable future unless they make some massive cuts. And Donald Trump is proposing $2.7 trillion in spending cuts. And if we can get the economy supercharged, because the economy is still doing well, consumer confidence is good, unemployment's really low, and if we can get tax revenues on the upswing and we cut spending by a significant amount, $2.7 trillion, that's a winning formula, not just for the president in 2020, but it's a winning formula for the country because we have to start reducing the deficit. Meanwhile, we have more insanity with Jim Acosta, the CNN clown show of a host. They were arguing, he and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, about whether Trump believes that all Democrats hate Jewish people.
Kind of rhetoric just sort of beneath everybody. And do you think that the president has thought at all going into this 2020 campaign that the rhetoric just needs to be lowered?
Okay, what's ironic about this question from Jim Acosta? How about the rhetoric of CNN that's gotten them a $250 million lawsuit because they, for days, ran with a purely fake story about that Covington Catholic High School kid? And Jim Acosta's talking about ratcheting down the rhetoric. CNN's such a clown show. They have no idea what rhetoric is. Okay, Fastest 15's coming up next.